This is Harv Aronson of the Total Sports Recall Podcast, and I recently decided to give Sterling Soap Company's Ground Breakfast Blend coffee a try. While brewing, the aroma was inviting and the taste, lightly sweet and delicious, as the texture of this amazing coffee was sweet and smooth, as I experienced a coffee with a velvety texture, almost creamy. Sterling's breakfast blend is light but in no way weak, with a high quality taste and smell. My wife and I are now hooked on Sterling Soap coffee, and you should be too. Check out their coffees and other products at sterlingsoap.com. That's S-T-I-R-L-I-N-G soap.com.
Well, hello, everybody. This is Doug Levy coming at you with episode number 7 of Under the Radar, Olympic Athletes You Gotta Meet. Shout out to the Sports History Network for hosting this podcast, based partly on my book, Hero Redefined. Give it a read if you get the chance. Today, I'm extremely proud to feature a gifted Paralympic swimmer and inspirational human being. This young man graduated summa cum laude from his high school class. He represented the U.S. in the 2024 Paralympic Games in Paris, competing in freestyle, butterfly, backstroke, and relays. He's an honors graduate from University of Kansas and a telecommunications engineer for a global engineering and construction firm. He started and leads 2 nonprofit foundations. He speaks 3 languages fluently and a 4th conversationally. Oh, and he'll turn 23 in September. So this guy is go, 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 and yet we'll also talk to him about a gutsy decision he made to hit the pause button. So let's bring in Yassine Eldemirdash, Paralympic swimmer and multi-talented whiz kid. Yassine, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me, Doug.
Well, it's great to have you, and I want to talk about a decision you made after Paris, but before we get to that, just introduce yourself to our listeners. You're from America's heartland, and dad emigrated from Egypt back in the 1990s, and you've been born and lived here your whole life, but tell us about growing up and how you got into swimming and how you got here.
Yeah. So, like you said, I grew up in the Midwest. I was born in Houston, Texas, and then moved to a suburb of Kansas City when I was 12. And so spent most of my life growing up in Kansas City. So that's where I consider my hometown. But my dad immigrated in the 90s, and my mom was the child of immigrants. And so, yeah, grew up in a diverse household, constantly being introduced to new cultures and languages and environments. And so I tried to carry that into, every aspect of my life. But swimming was honestly growing up my least favorite sport. That's like my favorite thing to share with people, is like I did just about every sport my parents could put me in. And swimming is just such a good all around sport, and it's so applicable to every other sport that it was just like a natural next step. And I like to joke that every year, I would sit down with my mom at the end of the season and I would be like, I'm quitting. I'm done. This is my last year swimming. And then, I had a childhood friend growing up named Darren. And every year she'd be like, oh, but what about Darren? What's he going to do if you leave? And I'd be like, okay, one more year. and that went on for a few years. And then high school came around, and I think I really started to, understand the sport. And find, kind of catch my stride and figure out what I loved about it. It kind of took off from there. So I guess I've been swimming since I was 7, which is crazy to think about. It's been a part of my life for most of my life. And swimming professionally since 2021. So we're going on 5 years, which is wild. Time flies.
I love that story of hating swimming and yet loving swimming and being with friends and the whole ball of wax. You also, Yassine, you grew up with something called Poland syndrome. Mm-hmm. Not a lot of people know what that is. Talk about what that is and how it affected you. You've obviously become an elite athlete, so you've dealt with it and overcome in so many ways. But give us a sense of what Poland syndrome is for the maybe the uninitiated listeners out there.
Yeah, so Pullen syndrome is it's a pretty rare condition that you're diagnosed with at birth. And so the way that it typically manifests is through the deformity or absence of muscles, ligaments, or bones, typically on one side of your upper body. And so usually in 90% or 99% of cases, it's the upper right side of your body. And for me, I have a pretty mild case. And so the extent of my impairment and my effect is I'm missing my right pec. I have stunted growth in my right arm. So essentially the muscles on my right side and the mass is just left. It's just less than my left. And then I have a deformity in my right hand. So I was born with basically, I like to describe it as like a mitten. So four of my fingers were fused together, and then, I had a surgery to separate them. And now I'm essentially missing, I don't really know what you would call it, but like the final segment of four of my fingers on my right hand. So I just have a slightly smaller hand. But yeah, so was born with that. It's always been a part of who I am growing up. It was always just something that made me unique. I never really thought of myself as a person with a disability. And so growing up, even in sports, I never considered myself disabled. It was never, an excuse or something that, like, if I wasn't doing well or I wasn't progressing or I wasn't doing as well as, as my peers, it was always just something that made me unique, and as a result was just something that I had to problem solve, and use to my advantage when I could. And then I discovered the Paralympics, and that opened a whole new side, to my life and my identity. But yeah, for the longest time, never identified as a person with a disability.
I almost have to laugh when I hear you use the word disability because I look at your resume, Yasin, and it's a whole life of ability, right? I mean, you've been such a good student. You're obviously an elite athlete to compete in the Paralympic Games. And you've also started a couple foundations, and that's not a normal thing for a 22 going on 23-year-old, right? So tell us about those two foundations you've got going. I think one of them deals with STEM and one of them deals with hemp, helping those athletes of tomorrow maybe get funded and get started.
I'm super fortunate. I was blessed to grow up in a community and with a family that supported me in whatever I wanted to do. And so I feel like a lot of, what I've been able to accomplish and the opportunities that I've had so far have been a direct result of the sacrifices of the people around me. And so growing up, it was always, how can I share this with as many people as possible? Because I don't think it's fair that, I get all these opportunities and I have these privileges and I'm not sharing them. I think that'd be super selfish. And so, yeah, in high school, I got the opportunity. I was approached by a mentor, to help co-found a nonprofit called Heartland STEM Incorporated. And so that was a 501c3 STEM nonprofit that focused on increasing access to STEM enrichment activities, and STEM education. And so we did a lot of STEM grants for educators and organizations, and fundraising, mentorship, and fundraising matching for STEM, like local STEM organizations and clubs. And so, yeah, STEM has always been a big part of my life. Obviously, now I'm an engineer, but before that, I did, first robotics and, just about like my parents love to joke, but like I used to disassemble my dad's laptops when he would leave for work, and he'd come back and they would just be in pieces on the ground. And so that eventually turned into a more productive career path, but I've always been interested in how things work and understanding it, and problem solving. And so STEM really, drew me in and opened a lot of doors for me. And Heartland STEM was my way to kind of share some of those resources and those experiences with people in rural and underserved communities. But yeah, so that nonprofit I'm no longer on the board of, and I'm no longer leading. And so that was for us, it was a big thing of like, how do we share? Obviously the nonprofit does good work, but working on a nonprofit is a super unique experience for a lot of people. And so how do we share that experience with as many people as possible? And so when I graduated high school, we handed off the reins to a new set of high schoolers. And so now they had the opportunity to run it and understand the inner workings and make their own impact. But yeah, and so I was looking back on that after Paris, and I realized that, I had had a similar experience with swimming, where obviously super fortunate to have a family that could support me. And if they couldn't have supported me financially and with time, I would not have made it to where I am in my career. And so I was super thankful for that. But more importantly, like swimming and sport in general has changed the trajectory of my life and so many other athletes. I think it's honestly one of the best ways to learn important life lessons,
Yeah.
and develop as an individual, just because like the ability to fail continuously and have to recover from that and learn from it is like you don't learn any like there's no better way to learn than by failing. And so yeah, sports was a great way to do that, and it was a great way to learn to communicate and work as a team and improve yourself. And I feel that that should be a part of everyone's development as a kid. Doesn't mean that they have to be competitive or shoot to be professional. But I just think that it's an important developmental opportunity that not enough people have access to. And so, yeah, I got back from Paris and I was at the training center in Colorado Springs, and I was like, man, like I met all these amazing athletes and these amazing organizations, and I have the background of understanding how to start a nonprofit, and I've done it before, and why am I not doing it in this aspect of my life? And so that was kind of when Heartland STEM and Ripple Effect kind of came together, and it became like a taking all of the great things that I learned from Heartland STEM and putting it into a new passion project.
And
And so
ripple
that's
effect
been.
is your one for the athletes.
Yes, sir. Yeah, Ripple Effect Incorporated, with an A. And so fun little play on words. But yeah, it's been a 2-year process of essentially just customer discovery, talking to athletes, talking to coaches, understanding as much as I can about their path to where they're at and the lessons that they learned and the organizations that helped them and the resources that were beneficial and things they wish they had. Yeah, I'm super excited to be kicking that off and getting the ball rolling, and we can't wait to see where it goes.
Fantastic. And I love your comments about sports because I'm a, obviously an ex-athlete and coached my kids. And I just, sports is the way to get lessons about winning and losing and grace and teamwork and humility. So many things come out of it that are so great for kids. Couldn't agree with you more. So let's talk about Yassine, the Paralympic swimmer. This kid who's growing up disassembling dad's laptop while he's away at work, and mom's got to push him into swimming each year. And then he becomes a Paralympian, for God's sakes. That is incredibly impressive. Tell us about your journey from high school to swimming in overseas competitions to a Paralympic Games in one of the greatest cities in the world. I mean, try and bottle that up and put it into words for people. That's a one heck of a journey, my friend.
Thank you. Yeah, you'd think I'd have it figured out by now, but it's every time I look back on it, and when I hear someone, like when I hear you talking about my journey, it's hard. It's like it's surreal. It's hard for me to envision that I went through that. And it everything just kind of felt like the natural next step. And so, for a long time, swimming was just, that thing that I did because my mom told me I should. And then, I got to high school and I was a part of, a team of guys and we're all kind of going like we used to describe it as we're just all suffering together. And we're just being tortured as a group. And we joked about it, but there was something about, going through these super difficult workouts with the same group of guys every day. It was just the thing that I looked forward to every day, and before school, after school, like that was all I thought about. And every waking minute, I would figure out how can I squeeze a little bit more out of myself in the pool, and whether that's getting in an extra a workout in the pool or going for a run or lifting or stretching or like it was constantly this game of like how can I get 1% more every day, and it was fun. And so once I got into that cycle and that process, and I think for us the high school season was you'd have one or two meets a week, and so you'd be able to see that gradual progress. It got addicting, and it was a ton of fun. And so yeah, did varsity all 4 years of high school, swam at state, was shooting to swim in college. Like, sports in my family has always been a tool and a means to an end in a way. And so it was never a discussion of like, oh, you could go pro in swimming or in soccer. It's like, it'll be a tool to get you into college, and that's the most important thing. And so that was kind of the extent of my expectations and my vision for my swim career. But yeah, I was looking at, it was my junior year of high school, and I was looking at planning to swim in college, and I was trying to figure out, what do I need to do to make that happen? What offers do I have so far? What does that look like? And then I had a coach that was like, "Have you considered checking out the Paralympics?" And I was like, "I don't think I'd qualify." Like,
What year was that, Yassine?
that was right before COVID. So that was
Okay.
2019, 2020. I think they mentioned it, yeah, early 2020. And then I don't think I actually did anything with it until 2021.
Okay.
But yeah, they had mentioned it, and I was like, I don't know. Like, I don't feel like I would qualify. I wasn't super familiar with the Paralympic movement, but finally went out to a meet in Colorado Springs, and yeah, ended up getting classified, and then we got back home and found some article written about my performance, and it turned out that I'd broken an American record, and so it was, yeah, it was crazy. It was like a 180 over the course of 24 hours of like how I viewed swimming and my outlook and the opportunities that I could have. Yeah, and so then it just became a game of like, okay, how can I, obviously fit this in with college life and every other aspect of my life, while also, having this goal of going to a games. And even in the lead up to Paris, I don't think I really processed that I had a chance. I think it was, I'm going to leave it all in the pool. I'm going to give it everything I can. I'm going to have fun racing. And if I get selected, I get selected. If I don't, at least I know I had fun. And I enjoyed the process and did everything I could. And so for it to turn out the way it did, and for me to qualify for the games and have, the best performance of my life at that trials was, could not have asked for a better way for it to pan out.
Yeah, so I want to get into what I think is an interesting dichotomy with you, Yassine. You're a very driven guy, clearly. And I appreciate that description of getting addicted to swimming and trying to squeeze 1% more out of yourself time to time. And then after you discover the Paralympics, you have a lot of success. You set records, you win medals, you go to Paris. You may not have gotten on the podium, but you did pretty well. And I saw you had a sixth place in one of your events. So then you make a decision, which is interesting to me. And I want you to talk about your thought process. So you're an elite athlete. You know, your whole mission revolves around getting better and pounding at it and going, going, going. And you make a decision to take a step back. You know, the elite athlete has that DNA and that fiber to keep going and wanting more and wanting better, right? And so you made a decision to hit the pause button, which I think in the general population, we get that. Among Olympians, Paralympians who are so uber dedicated to their craft, it's maybe a little bit unusual. So talk about that and your process and just wanting to take a step back. It's an interesting one.
It was a very difficult decision for sure. I think, and it was a good journey of self-discovery getting to that conclusion. But for the longest time, and I think a lot of athletes, especially elite athletes, kind of at the end of the day end up having the same mindset when it comes to training and how you approach your sport, but also how you approach your life. As far as like, you want to be able to commit 100% to everything you do. And in a way, we're all, perfectionists to some degree. And I think for me, I very quickly realized that if I wasn't able to commit 100%, I was never satisfied, with the progress or performance, that I was getting. And that's whether it's in school, or work or training. You want to be able to commit 100% to everything, and it's just not possible. And so, yeah, for the longest time, swimming was that priority. And so it would always be, what do I have to, cut back on in my personal life so that I can commit as close to 100% as possible to swimming at this point in time. And it was, it, I mean, that the 4 years leading up to Paris were very up and down as far as, commitment and motivation and all of, these aspects that factor into your training and your consistency. But at the end of the day, swimming was always the priority, and it was always at the front of my mind. And qualifying for Paris was always that goal. And so all the decisions I made over the course of those 4 years, whether it had to do with school or internships or friendships, revolved around how does this affect, my possibility of going to Paris? How does this limit or hinder or detract or take time away from, this goal that I've set for myself? And so once I had accomplished that, I wanted to keep that same mentality going towards LA. And I very quickly realized that that's not sustainable, right? And so it's a 4 year cycle. And at the end of the day, it does not matter what you do in those first 3 years. If that last year you fall off and you get burnt out, doesn't matter. Like the 3 years, null and void. And so that was and I'm very fortunate that I had coaches and other athletes around me that were like, pointing out that, this is your first full quad. You have to understand that it's not a sprint, it's a marathon, and you have to be able to last 4 years. And if you can't, it's not going to work out. And so, yeah, then it became a discussion of, okay, how do I prioritize these other aspects of my life? That way, I'm not getting burnt out over the course of those 4 years. And so we experimented with, 50% commitment to training and 50% commitment to my internship, or 50% in training, 50% in school. And ultimately we realized that it's very difficult for me to train and not give it 100% and feel satisfied in 25% or 50%. And so, yeah, finally, I think I got to a point where I was like, okay, I think I should make the same way that I've made decisions with every other aspect of my life, reprioritize and set expectations. And so for the first time in a very long time, swimming became one of the lower priorities in my life, so that I could focus on graduating and getting a job, because in the long run and in that 4 year game, that's ultimately going to set me up for the best chances of success.
So when
As I
did you
can.
turn off that spigot, Yassine? When did you turn off the training and the pounding on the swimming career?
Yeah, so I took an extended break after Paris. So I got back and coaches were like, take 4 weeks off at least. Because I got back and I was like, no, I want to get in the pool. And they were like, no, take 4 weeks. Like, you need 4 weeks. And I was like, okay, I'll take 4 weeks. And then that 4 weeks turned into 2 months, and then the 2 months turned into 6 months. And so it ended up being about 6 months after Paris that I was like, all right, time to get back into training. Started training again, and then it was right around last summer, because I swam in Indianapolis. That was the qualifications for the World Championships. So I got back into training, and I think I'd been training for about 2 months. Went to Indy, qualified for the World Championships, got back, and it was like the beginning of the summer. And so that was summer of my senior year. I had 1 semester left, and I had an internship that would then lead to my now job. And I was concerned that, the last 2 summers, I was very fortunate that the company I work at was super flexible, and they were willing to work with me and my swimming and allowing me to prioritize that. And I was like, I really need to make sure that I have a solid job at a company that wants to support me and support everything I want to do outside of work. And I was concerned that if I trained and then subsequently left at the end of my internship to go race overseas, I would be jeopardizing the potential of, having this future career at a company that would allow me to continue to swim and allow me to continue to travel and train and do all these things. And so I think it was right after Indy, which was, I'd like to say, end of May, early June of last year, that we decided to just completely turn off the spigot and be like, all right, we're going to completely cut off training, and we're just going to focus on these other aspects of my life. And then January of this year is when we started to kind of ramp back into training and figuring out what that looks like.
Okay. So
So yeah.
you're at Burns and McDonald. It's a global engineering firm. I think they're pretty lucky to have you as well as you're lucky to be with them, right?
Yes, I'm so
And it
fortunate.
sounds like now you've turned that spigot back on. I think I'm hearing those competitive juices start to flow a little bit. The 28 games, sir, are on U.S. soil in Los Angeles.
They are.
Third time Los Angeles is going to have the summer games ever. So I think I hear that swimmer getting back in the pool, getting himself mentally ready. Am I hearing correctly?
I think you are. I mean, it's now, it's weird how your priorities shift once you've, like, I've always been, and I think this is something that I've struggled with personally, is like setting goals, accomplishing those goals, and then figuring out what your purpose is. And so for me, I've always been go, go, go. Like, I set a goal, I hit that goal, and then I've got another one lined up. And so Paris was that goal for such a long time, and then I accomplished it. And now the logical next step is being on the podium. But it's very difficult to find measurable goals in between there, right? And so it's like you've achieved the pinnacle of your sport, like you've made it to the games. How do you find, these benchmarks after that, to keep yourself going and keep yourself motivated? And so yeah, I'm still super motivated and excited to race and push myself. But now, honestly, the challenge becomes how do you do that while maintaining the joy that you had for this sport that you did for so long?
And time
Because,
management for you. You got a lot of things going on every 24 hours, I think.
yeah, it's packed. And so, yeah, the biggest thing is preserving that joy because I don't have an infinite amount of free time. And so everything I do takes from that. And so how do I continue to swim and continue to race in a way that's conducive to joy and truly loving what I'm doing, because if you don't love it, why are you doing it?
That's right.
So it's an interesting return to competition. It's kind of unconventional, but we're working through it.
Glad to hear we're gonna see your name in the lights for 2028. But I want to have you pause and go back to 2024 too. You know, you
Yes.
see, there's such a tiny, tiny fraction of the population that'll ever go and compete in the Olympics and the Paralympics. You did that in 2024, and you're in one of the greatest locations in the world doing it. So
Yeah.
let's teleport for a second. Let's teleport yourself to Yassine, the grandfather, one day, and he's with the grandkids, and they say, "Grandpa, tell us about the top experiences of being in a Paralympic Games." I mean, what are the couple few memories you'll take with you and you'll always store in your memory bank forever?
Oh, that's a great question. I mean, honestly, like it's so difficult to explain what a games environment is like. I mean, like just walking around the village that first week before competition, like it's it like the vibe and the atmosphere is just unlike anything else I've experienced. Like you have so many people from so many different countries that A, are experiencing a massive amount of relief because this goal that they have been, pushing for years is finally realized. And so they're like, okay, we're here. And so they're really, really happy to be in this place and be present. And then obviously they're a little bit anxious about the upcoming competition, but like the primary emotion that you feel and the atmosphere is all revolving around this joy for being in this place. With all these other people that have done, they've accomplished the same goal that, you've worked so hard for. And so I think some of the fondest memories that I have and the strongest, memories I have of the games were in the village meeting people and like talking to people and communicating with them and learning about their journey and how they got to where they were at. Because also when you're in that environment with all these other athletes that have done the same things that you're doing, I think especially when you're at home and you're talking to people and you try to explain like, what it's like to compete at that level or what it took to get there, not many people understand it. But when you're in that environment, every single person there understands it. And so there's this like almost un like not acknowledged but understood level of understanding for where everyone is at and what they have done to get to where they're at. And so the conversations that you have are just immediately like just genuine, and the level of connection was unlike anything else I'd been able to have in sport prior to that moment. And so yeah, just the live music and the people running around, and everyone is so excited to meet people. And yeah, it was just the culture was addicting. Like, it's so hard to explain what that was like.
I'm super interested in your response because it's about the bonding experience you have. It's almost unexplainable to the person who hasn't been there. But I've read
Yeah.
other first person accounts by Olympians of how much camaraderie there is. We, you know, we turn on our TV sets and we tend to think about this hardcore competition and head knocking, but so often the athletes who have been there say, you know, it's not like that. We are, we're friends and we're competitors, yeah, but we're friends between the competitions and we're all together in ways that you can't understand until you step foot in there.
No, it's and this is the weirdest thing for me, and the most interesting part of learning about going to the games was it's probably the worst environment, like the worst, like the least conducive environment to performance that you will ever have as an athlete.
How
And so
so?
like you go into it thinking like, oh, the games is going to be like, this is the pinnacle of sport. Like, this is where you have your best performance and where like everything is in your favor. Everything is against you. Like, all the odds are against you. You're in a completely different country. You're sleeping in a completely foreign environment. Nothing is comfortable. You're eating food you're not used to. Your training cycle is completely different than what you're used to. Obviously, you're super stressed because you're at the biggest event of your life. And then there's all of the fanfare. And so everyone around you is super excited to meet you and see you perform. And like, you're in the pool and there's these bright lights and there's underwater cameras and like, you know, there's interviews every time you get out of the pool and there's cameras flashing. And so it's
And you're
like,
20 years old, by
yeah,
the
you're trying to figure out how to navigate this environment, and you just went from 0 to 100.
Yeah.
And so people always assume, they're like, oh, you go to the games and you're going to have the best performance of your life. Like, this is going to be like your peak. And it's like, no, if you have a great performance at the games, it was despite like all of this, you know, like all of these roadblocks and these difficulties and these challenges. And so that was a big wake up call for me, because like I got to Europe and my coach was like, because he had had athletes that had made it to the games before, and he was like, just so you know, this is going to be the worst environment you will ever have to perform in. And I was like, I don't think you mean that. That he was dead serious, and he was spot on. Like,
The
it's,
untold story. I love it.
yeah. And so the main thing that everyone can lean into and what they can enjoy is just being there and being present and trying to take in the environment that you're in. Because if you try and fixate on, you know, the performance side of it and the environment, you're going to lose that battle every single time.
Fascinating glimpse into what it's like to be there. Now I want you to give us a glimpse into what it's like to be Yassine around the clock, because as we've talked about, you're with Burns McDonald. You're a telecommunications engineer, I think. You've done robotics. You've gotten scholarships. You've started these foundations. I think you speak very good English, Arabic, and Spanish, if I'm not mistaken.
That is correct.
How do you fit all that stuff into a 24-hour cycle? I think it's important for us to get a peek at that because you've always got something going on.
I mean, I think the honest answer is I barely do, if at all. And so, you know, it's, I think I always have thrived in environments of chaos. And so like, I like to joke that my life is an endless state of chaos, but it really is. And I feel like I like to always feel like I'm working towards something. And so that probably all stems from, you know, sports and my mindset coming from sports development. But yeah, it's always just been a how can I make myself 1% better every day? And so it's how can I make myself one, not necessarily like better, I think is an umbrella term, but like how do I make myself more capable, more diverse, more culturally aware every single day? How do I just, introduce myself to something new every day? And so obviously I grew up speaking Arabic. When I was in Houston, there was a big Arabic speaking population, and my grandparents lived there, and Arabic is obviously my dad's first language. And so growing up, I learned Arabic honestly before I learned English. And so I guess technically I could say Arabic is my first language, but obviously I speak English more. And so yeah, it started with Arabic, and then in school I took Spanish. And then my brother had the opportunity to do, my youngest brother, so I'm the oldest of four. He's 14 now, but when he was in kindergarten, they introduced a Chinese immersion program at his elementary school. And so my mom was like, he's going to do Chinese immersion. And I was like, ah, oh, let me learn Chinese. And so I started taking Mandarin Chinese. And I think the fact that I had learned, I was bilingual by the time, I was able to speak fluently in either language. That kind of helped. I'm assuming it did something with my mental state when it comes to learning languages. And so learning languages has always been something that I've been super passionate about. And now that I travel, it's easily the most valuable life experience that I've had. Like being able to communicate with someone in their native language in their country, opens so many doors for experiences that are way more genuine than any like generic tourist experience is going to give you. And so yeah, I just got back from a month in Europe and a week and a half of which was in Spain. And so being able to use that Spanish and communicate with people and experience their lives and what it's like to live there and actually communicate with them in their language was a blessing. But yeah, I mean the biggest thing is just finding joy in every single thing that I'm doing and finding some aspect of it that I'm passionate about and then just leaning into that.
So you
And that's
gave
after a
us
while,
the
that's good.
window into how you got some working knowledge of Mandarin and growing up with Arabic and obviously speaking a lot of English in the United States. How the heck did you get fluent in Spanish?
I mean, honestly, that all goes to school. Like, I just got lucky that, K through 12, they were really pushing Spanish as a secondary language. And I don't think it really fell together until my junior senior year of high school. I think for the longest time I was like, maybe I'm learning, I don't really know. But I think we started to do more immersion senior year of high school, and so I started to understand it. And then right after high school I went to Mexico. And so I was racing in Mexico and raced in Chile, and I was racing in these Latin American countries, and I was there for a couple weeks at a time. And so it was kind of like a trial by fire where I'm like dropped in. Like genuinely the best way to learn a language is immersion. If you drop yourself in another country for a month, you're going to figure out how to speak their language, at least conversationally. And so, yeah, I was kind of super lucky with the timing where, like, I had taken Spanish, I graduated, and then I got dropped in a Spanish-speaking country for a month. And so then it was like, okay, now I have to use it. And I made probably more progress in that month than I did in a few years of school.
Terrific. Okay, so I am sensing a classic goal setter here. And I think you've let the cat out of the bag. You did turn off the swimming spigot. It's getting turned back on. I'm already stacking Allyson Felix and Yassine El Demirdash on my list for the 28 Olympic and Paralympic Games. So you must be in your mind setting some goals for 2028 in LA. What do those look like, Yassine? Is that I want a medal in this event, or I want to improve myself in every event? What's the marker you're setting up in your brain?
I mean, honestly, right now I'm still working through the performance metrics of what I want to accomplish. The bare minimum is being on the podium. In what event? I'm not sure yet. But if I'm going back, I'm no longer just shooting for making it. We want to win the whole thing. And so, I think honestly, the biggest goal and the biggest target is finding out why I'm swimming. Like it sounds really weird and it sounds kind of kind of ironic and kind of the opposite of what you would expect, but like genuinely at this point in my career, I have so many other things going on in my life that I'm passionate about, that I can't afford, to commit significant amount of time to th like significant amounts of time to things that I'm not really sure what I enjoy and why I'm doing them.
So does that
And
mean multiple events again? Have you decided?
I haven't. I think right now I'm still like when I was racing in Europe this past month, I raced every event, and I think I'll probably continue to do that for now. My training will most likely shift to prioritize a specific event, so whether that's the 50 free or the 100 free, or the 100 back, I don't really know yet. It's hard to tell. I think it's just genuinely going to be whatever event I have the most fun racing, because yeah, ultimately, like the goal is just to have fun. And I think if I have fun and I enjoy the process, I think the subconscious like mental training from the last, 15 years of swimming will kick in, and then it'll just become a game again of like how do we get 1% better every single day at this event, and then that'll get me to where I want to be on the podium. So, yeah.
Delighted to hear the word fun because shouldn't that be the driver, right?
Absolutely.
So let's end, let's have a little bit of fun. Let's segue away from swimming and working and packing 48 hours into every 24. I want to
Yes.
just have you take a moment. Yassine's out and about and he gets to choose any food he wants. Parents don't even get to interfere. He can have anything he wants. He can have the remote and clicker in his hand and stream or watch anything he wants. And then he's getting a group of friends together on a Saturday night and they can do whatever the heck they want. What do those things look like for you, seeing Alabama Dash?
Oh man. Fate, like if I could have any food. This is the great thing about being a swimmer though. It's kind of underrated. You can eat whatever you want. Like the nutrition cycle
Calories
for a
are irrelevant,
swimmer,
right?
yeah, it's just eating. Like there's no diet, there's no yeah, I eat whatever I want. But honestly, I go crazy for Auntie Anne's pretzel bites. Like
All
if
right.
yeah, if you ask any of my friends, that's probably what they're gonna say. Yeah, 9 times out of 10, I'm getting, especially when I go to the airport every single time. They opened one in Kansas City, and that was probably the best thing they could have done. But yeah, so Auntie Anne's pretzel bites. If I could watch anything, oh man, TV show wise, I'm a big sucker for the show Psych. Absolutely love that show. It's like my comfort show. I'll always just put that on when I want to work on something else and have something to laugh at in the background. Or like complete opposite, not a TV show. Just put me out in the middle of nowhere in the mountains and I'll just sit there and stare off for a couple hours. Yeah, I think
They
sitting
call
there with
that
some pretzel
mindfulness in
bites,
the medical world. That's a great thing,
it'd be
right?
lovely.
Yeah.
And
Okay,
then
but
yeah, if
now
I had
you're back from the mountains with a group of friends on a
yeah.
Saturday night. What's gonna take number one on the podium for that?
Probably a bonfire. I feel like that's like the Midwest answer for what people do on a Saturday night, but just like lighting stuff on fire and just sitting there and talking. I think is probably one of my favorite things that me and my friends do. So yeah, we'd probably be doing that.
Okay, I love it. All right, last question. Let's take this out on a you're gonna swim to the other end of the pool. The other end of the pool is 5 years away, and
Okay.
you're gonna tell us what your 5-year goal looks like. Do you want to be
Oh boy.
owning the engineering firm, running the Olympics, and creating 10 more foundations, or what's it look like that time from age 23 up to 28, 29, 30? What's the goal?
Oh man, I can hardly even think about what I'm gonna do tomorrow, but I think the most important thing is I want to be making an impact, and I want to be sharing my experiences with as many people as I can. And so I hope that that's the ripple effect. I hope that that nonprofit is accomplishing the goal that we set out to have it do. And so I think honestly, 5 years from now, if I could have anything, consistent or happening, it's that that nonprofit is doing what it set out to do. Because I think there's a lot of potential there for a lot of good to be done. And I think it has the opportunity to help a lot of communities, but also a lot of athletes find a purpose and find a reason for why they did what they did. And so, yeah, I think that's really the only thing right now that I think I could say for sure I would like to see, you know, doing well in 5 years. Everything else I think will kind of work itself out.
Well, holy cow, if we can line up a bunch of 23-year-olds and have them say they want to make an impact on this world, I think we're going to have a pretty good future. So
I'm excited.
I think that's a pretty good way to go out. Annie Ann's pretzels, a bonfire in the Midwest, and making an impact. That's pretty good stuff.
Thank
Yassine,
you. Thank you.
thank you so much for joining us. Had a blast interviewing you, and I wish you the absolute best in your Paralympic pursuits. And
Thank you.
for those listening, I hope you'll put Yassine El Demirdash on at the top of your list to root for. It's the kind of kid we want to see do great things. Yassine, thank you so much.
Thanks, Doug. I appreciate it.
Okay. All right, folks. That'll be a wrap for this episode. And join us next month for episode 8 as we talk to another athlete aiming to do great things. And we'll leave you with the mystery of who that is. But we appreciate you listening. Take care.
Hey there, sports history fan. This is Arnie Chapman, aka the Football History Dude. And I hope that you enjoyed this recent episode presented by the Sports History Network and were able to learn some good old-fashioned sports history knowledge nuggets. I started the Sports History Network back in 2020 with the mission to help podcasters find a community of like-minded sports history nerds, as well as helping aspiring podcasters to start their own shows. We have a little bit over 30 shows on the network right now covering all sorts of sports history, but as far as I'm concerned, we're just at the toothpick in the ocean moment, you know, that can't even figure it out because there's so much more coming. We wanted to create the ultimate headquarters for sports yesteryear, starting with Podcast Network and our website, but we're going to continue to move into other mediums as well. And here's the cool part, because we want you to be part of our team. So if you're interested in starting your own podcast, or maybe being a guest on one of our shows, or who knows, maybe even writing an article for us over on the website. Seriously, all you got to do is reach out to us on the contact page over at sportshistorynetwork.com. You can be as technologically savvy as a Neanderthal tapping on a stone trying to figure out this whole hieroglyphics thing back in the day. Again, it doesn't matter, because even if you don't understand the whole podcast space, we have a production team that can pretty much help you out with doing everything. All you got to do, head over to sportshistorynetwork.com, head to the contact page, fill it out. That message goes right to me, and I'll reach out to you as soon as I can. But for now, dude, I'm through if you're through.